Hi, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a responsive day for the eighth day of Shivat. Thank you to Leo Yut, Rabbi Jacob Romitz, and to David Hachhauser for putting these shirim out in a place where you can get them and you can enjoy them. And thank you for coming and for listening. Today we're going to see a couple of tshuvot because we start with the tshuva of the Bach. And so we've done this before, but I point out that it's always interesting to me that the Bach already in this tshuva is from Shin Tzadi Vav. So we're used to assuming there's a tough before the Shin, right? We're thinking immediately tough Shin Tzadi. No, just Shin Tzadi Vav, which would have been the year 1631. So in 1631, the Bach is already dating his tshuvot. As far as I can tell from my Bar Ilan, that's a very early date for somebody to even somewhat consistently date tshuvot, and it's an opportunity to learn from the Bach in the way that we don't usually get to in this context. So, Shut Bach Chadashot, Siman Nun. And it's said that he wrote it to a nechto, to his grandson, I think. So, Tidok Ben Bechor. Here's the question. Remember that today, thank God, medicine has taken many important advances, and therefore things like child mortality are much different than they used to be, and thank God much lower than they used to be. So that's a wonderful thing. But let's suppose, so in those days, when a child was born, if there was any issues with the child, the halacha is, you wait a long time before you give the child a brit milah, a circumcision, because circumcision is a medical procedure. It's a can have some danger to it. In our time, thank God, almost always it does not, because children are born healthier and things like that. But if there's any doubt about it, the halacha is you don't do it. Meaning, it's supposed to be done on the eighth day. But the eighth day is the first time one can do it. With most mitzvot, the first opportunity you have to do it, you should do the mitzvah. But if there's any worry about the child, then you wait until the child is strong enough that you can be certain that they'll have a brit milah. And if a child stays sickly enough their whole lives that we cannot think that we'll be able to do the brit milah, so then you'd probably wait. You know, if the medical advice is that doing a brit milah brings danger to the child's life, then they don't do it. For example, this is a well-known halakha. If, God forbid, two boys in a family passed away from the brit milah, now, people assume today that it's because of undiagnosed hemophilia, but whatever the cause might be, the third brother does not get a brit milah. The Rambam says until he goes very much older, and they were really, really confident that he doesn't have the issues that would have been plagued this other person, but he could stay in Ariel his whole life, and that would be halachically valid. That's not an Ariel where he's liable for violating the Torah, it's just you wait. So now the case in the Bach is, so let's say you wait, and by the time you get around to the child, so this could easily happen, let's say with a premature child. A baby's born prematurely, and so it's we're worried about its health, we're not going to do a brit milah, but it lives, and thank God it lives. So now, and it's a firstborn child. So a firstborn child needs also, a firstborn child to parents, both of the parents are from the tribe, from Yisrael, they're neither Kohanim nor Levim, both the mother and the father are neither from a Kohen family or a Levi family. The child needs a pidyun haben. So now the question is, do you do the pidyun haben first, or, right, now it's the 31st day, pidyun haben is a mitzvah, but we're not ready to give the kid a brit milah. Let's say in a week, we're pretty sure we're going to be ready. So do you wait and do the brit milah first, or do you do the pidyun haben right away? So in other words, the question is so normally we don't even think about the question, right? Because the brit milah comes on the eighth day, and the pidyun haben isn't done until the 31st day when we're positive that the baby's not a premature baby. So it's always in that order. Now the question is that order necessary, or that's just the usual order because of the timing of the two mitzvot? So the Bach's answer is that I don't have to spend a lot of time on this question. It's a Gemara. So he says explicit Gemara. This is about an adult convert, if he agreed to keep the Torah, meaning when somebody comes and says they want to convert, the first thing we say to them is you got to understand what the Torah is, and there's a lot to it, and it's burdensome isn't the right word, except that we want to stress to the convert that there's a lot to Torah. And this is, if you'll allow me to digress for one second, this is an important issue that doesn't get enough attention in our times, that when we convert somebody and they're not really ready to keep mitzvot, but let's say we do a valid conversion for them, we're not doing them any big favors because now they are liable for all of their violations of the Torah. So, and whereas before they weren't, right? Before they could have just been a perfectly fine non-Jew, and now we induct them into Judaism, they're really ready to keep Shabbos every week. They're violating Shabbos, sometimes knowingly, sometimes not knowingly, and it's, anyway. So the halacha in the Gemara is, if the convert sincerely agrees to keep the Torah, then malino to miyad, we give him a bris mila right away. So the verse says, my time a shihui mitzvah lo mashkinan mitrapei matpilino to miyad. We do the mitzvah right away, because if there's a mitzvah him to have a bris mila because he wants to be a convert, then we do it right away. We don't want to delay it. And then once he recovers from the mila, then they goes to mikvah right away. So why when he recovers from the mitzvah? So the Magid Mishnah said, but I don't understand, the way when you do it that way, you create a delay in his conversion. Why would you just do it the other way? Why don't you have the guy go to mikvah, the convert, go to mikvah, and then do the Brit Milah afterwards? Because in other words, after the Brit Milah, he can't immerse because he's got an open wound. So he can't immerse in the mikvah until the wound heals and he heals. So do it the other way, because once he's gone to mikvah, there's no need to wait to do the Brit Milah. So the Ramban said we could have done it that way. It's not that we don't do that, it's not that the Brit Milah has to happen first. You could have imagined that you could say, well, the Brit Milah, we hold that the immersion in the mikvah must be the final step of the Gerut process. So the Ramban, Magnus quotes, it says, that's not true. The reason we do it is because Mila is the more difficult one, and therefore, we want to confront him with the more difficult activity, because we don't want to, if he's going to say, oh, you know what, I realize this is too much for me, we want him to do it before we do the Brit Milah. We want him to do it before the process is over. So if you put him into the mikvah and then you have the Brit Milah, so then he might turn back, but he's already partially Jewish because he's going to the mikvah and he's already done part of the Gerus process. We don't like that. We don't want to have a partial Gerus process happen and then the person step back. If he's going to step back, we want him to step back before it starts. But the Ramban says explicitly that if he, in fact, did the tefillah first, went to the mikvah first, and then had the Brit Milah, that's also a perfectly fine ger. And he brought a raya, he brought a proof, that in his, whatever, the proof is not important to us, but that in fact, it's not that the Mila has to go first, it's just that that's the way we do it. So the Bach assumes that the proof that the Ramban thought there was a proof, meaning when the Magid Mishnah quotes it, he mentions that there's a proof, but he doesn't tell us what the proof is. And so I think the Bach doesn't have the Ramban in front of him. So he says he thinks that the proof is probably another Gemara in Yevamot, which says that if a woman who's pregnant converts to Judaism, that her son, the child, when he comes out, does not need to go to mikvah again. Why would that be? Because we assume what's called ubar yerech imo, that a fetus, an embryo, a child inside the mother is part of the mother, and therefore the immersion in mikvah counted for the baby as well. So the Bach is assuming that therefore that means that if the tevila came first, because then when's he going to have the mila? When he has a bris mila. I could have imagined saying that the baby is so much a part of the mother that when she immerses, all of everything inside of her becomes fully Jewish, so the baby that comes out is no longer in a conversion process. That's a Jewish baby that came out. But the Bach is not assuming that way. The Bach is assuming, no, this baby is still in the process of conversion, just that the Milah, the Brit Milah that he'll have on his eighth day of his life, will be the conversion Brit Milah that he needed, which shows the Ramban that the order isn't important. Bach also notes that the Tosfos took this another way. They thought it was Halacha L'Moshe Sinai, that maybe the Brit Milah had to come first, and then you'd have to wonder about our case. But for the Ramban, it seems very clear that the reason we put the Mila first is Mishum, the way the Bach says in Mishum, to e parish lifrosh. If he's going to change his mind, let him change his mind now before we put him through the, meaning if he's not going to change his mind till after the mikvah, we don't like that. Anyway, that's the way the Ramban has it. Now, the way the Gemara says it, though, is Eino ger ach yimol v'yitbol. And he's not the man is not a ger until he has a brit milah and then goes to mikvah. So you might think that's the necessary order. The Bach says, no, it's not true. They're just saying you need both of those things. And then he says, I went on at length about this, and I've obviously skipped much of it because I didn't want to spend our time on technicalities, because I feel that's hard to, for me anyway, to communicate over the internet or the airwaves. Technicalities are always a little bit technical, so when you're in person. Anyway, so I didn't go into all of that, but he says, I went to all this to Zabach to show you that the principle of shihuye mitzvah lo mashkinan, that we don't like to delay mitzvot to come our way, is a valid principle in general. So when it came to a convert, we would also say shihuye mitzvah lo mashkinan, which would then theoretically have pushed us to say, do the immersion first, and then the Brit Milah, because then you'll have completed the process already, and you won't have the delay. Whereas the way we do it, we do the Brit Milah first, and then he recovers, and then we go to mikvah. So why do we do that? And the only reason we do that, according to the Ramban, which the Bach is assuming is the authoritative reading of this issue, is because of Iparish Nifrosh. We want to be sure that if he's going to stop the process in the middle, that he stops it before, if he's going to stop the process once the Mila comes his way, that he does it before he gets to the process, and then he throws in a thing that people forget, that the Gemara says clearly, the Kashim Gerim Yisrael Kasapata, that there's some issue with Gerim. So we want to make sure with a Ger, that the Ger only comes and joins the Jewish people if he, it's true of a She as well, we're just talking about the balance between, or the order of Brit Milah and immersion, so that's why he talks about a man, But we want to make sure that if the man converts, that he's truly sincere, that he really means to do it. That's because there's some issues with bringing Gerim to the Jewish people. A topic of its own that we're not going to get into, because our topic is the one of the question of order. But fundamentally, when mitzvos come our way, unless we know of some reason that the order matters, we do it in the order that they come our way. Or it might be that there is a specific halacha l'moshe. We see an eye in the case of Mila and Tvila for Gerus, which is what the Tosos had it. The Nebuchadnezzar Yosef had another idea that the Bach mentions, that Nebuchadnezzar Yosef says that it's like a tovel b'sheretz biyado, meaning that if somebody's still uncircumcised, going to mikvah is an odd thing. So it's a play on words, it's a double play on words. The play on words number one is tovel b'sheretz biyado. I mean, there's only one play on words. Tovel b'sheretz biyado is usually used about somebody who goes to mikvah to get rid of ritual impurity, but they're holding an item of ritual impurity. So then Nebuchadnezzar Yosef is sort of saying having an uncircumcised body is like an actual impurity, because the Jewish people are supposed to be, so the Jewish men are supposed to be circumcised men. So if this man is going to mikvah and he's not yet circumcised, there's a flaw there. That's what the Nebuchadnezzar Yosef says. So the Nebuchadnezzar Yosef seems to see, really, in the case of Mila and Tfila, that the Mila has to come first for an actual reason. The Bach's point, though, is that all of these reasons that are given are about, specifically about Mila and Tfila, and they don't contradict the principle that shihuye mitzvah lo mashkinan. So therefore, since we don't have this, since we have this principle that when a mitzvah comes our way, we should do it, then it's obvious that you do the pidyon haben immediately, because we have no evidence whatsoever that a milah has to precede a pidyon haben. They're connected to each other in any kind of way. Meaning, even for the Nebuchadnezzar Yosef, if going to mikvah is contraindicated by being uncircumcised, we have no knowledge of the fact that pidyon haben is contraindicated by that, right? If we knew that the child was going to be it was so unhealthy that he'll never have a bit milah, there's nobody who would ever suggest that means he doesn't have to have a pidyon haben either. It's just not true. The mitzvah pidyon haben is an independent mitzvah, and therefore we should do it right away. And then he says, you brought up some ideas about why we should wait with the pidyon haben. So this is a grandfather talking to his grandson. He says, "Tamani alecha kama dimyonotus farosha katafta leave note for the story." You brought up all these ideas and these comparisons. You have these knowledge and thoughts and concepts. And he says, "Ve'ein lehem shoresh v'ikar b'talmud." And they have no basis in the Gemara. Meaning the Bach is saying, when you want to come up with a new idea of how Judaism should work, it's got to have basis in the Gemara. If it doesn't have basis in the Gemara, then you shouldn't be raising it. Ve'lo kein alfinach kishaita b'mechitzati. When you were learning by me, I didn't teach you to learn that way. I taught you that the way we keep our Judaism, I think this is an important thing to think about in our times as well, the way we keep our Judaism is a Judaism that's based in, now you have Rishonim and you have commentators that have understood, expanded our understanding of this and apply it in various situations, but it's based in what the Gemara tells. If it's not in the Gemara, then you don't talk about it. And therefore, if you want to ask me a question, he says, just ask the question. Unless you have a real proof, right? And it's a valid proof from the Gemara itself or from actual poskim, from actual Rishonim and nothing else. Now, this is a little harsh, but I guess that's their relationship. I don't know what the relationship was. And therefore, in terms of your question, that's your answer. And then he throws in one more thing that the grandson had suggested, that what if the Bechor is going to be an Arel his whole life? Because his running, I was careful to say, because we know that he's unhealthy for some reason. But the example the grandson tried to give was, well, what about if his brothers had died? Now, that sounds like it couldn't be possible, because if a child's a Bechor, then if a child's a firstborn, then how, such that there's a need for a pidyon haben, then how could there be brothers who died? And so he suggested, maybe he had brothers through the father, right? He had half-brothers who passed away. So half-brothers have passed away, and this is the bechor of the mother's first child. So it's not the father's bechor, but it's the mother's first child, and that's a peter rechem, so you'd need a pidyon haben. So that would be a way that you could say, maybe this child is never going to have a brit milah because he has older brothers. So the Bach says it's not true, because for the purposes of whether or not we give a brit milah to a child whose brothers have passed away, it's brothers through the mother who died from a circumcision. Now, I will say that many people, again, assume that when this Gemara says the brothers died by circumcision, they assume that it's hemophilia, but the best of my understanding, hemophilia... No, that's exactly right. Hemophilia is carried on the X chromosome, right? So for a boy, the hemophilia is only passed through a carrier mother is the problem, and so that would make a lot of sense in this situation. So not that the Bach knew about genetics, but it seems like that's the way the Bach understood. So that is our first tshuva of the day. The Bach talking about whether you could do a pidyon haben before Brit Milah. The fundamental answer is yes, you can, because we know of no reason why they come in the particular order. There's a possibility in terms of conversion. Some authorities seem to think, for there are various reasons why you should want to do the Brit Milah first in case of an ordinary conversion where there's a man there, even though that'll mean you'll have to wait, or they don't like to wait. But when it comes to Pidgin HaBen, there's no reason to wait to do the Pidgin HaBen after the Brit Milah. So that's our first tshuva for today. The next one I'll also try to do relatively briefly because it's a topic that we saw basically yesterday. So if you were listening in order, and I don't know that you have to, but if you were listening to yesterday's response, or if you go back and listen to it, we had Moshe Feinstein teaching us about what happens when people get married in various ways that aren't the orthodox ways of marriage, or the witnesses aren't orthodox witnesses. So in Shud Heichal Yitzchak, Rav Herzog, Shud Heichal Yitzchak, Evan HaEzer, Bet Simon Chaf Vav, dated the 8th of Shvat of Tuf Shein Yud Aleph of 1951. Rav Herzog is the Ashkenazi chief rabbi of Eretz Yisrael. And it's talking about a situation where a guy puts a ring, again, these feel like high school kids, puts a ring on a girl's finger and he says, Areyat, and she makes she says something right away that makes it seem like she does not intend to be married. He machta. She protested. She rebelled. She protested is probably the best word. And then there are witnesses there who all agree that the whole thing was a joke. So can a joke work? Does the fact that it's a joke mean? Now, there's also some doubt about whether what words he said, and the witnesses didn't hear all the words, and at least one of the witnesses wasn't an observant Jew. So do you have to give her a get me suffix? So a get me suffix means that we're not sure what's going on here, and therefore we'll ever get a get, because why not? Well, the why not is because then she can't marry a Kohen. So after that. So that's the question. Is there enough here that we say we're very sorry, but we have to do a get me suffix or not? So Rav Herzog says, and he's writing to the Rav of Zichron Yaakov. So apparently this story happened in Zichron Yaakov. He says, so one witness says very clearly that the whole thing was a joke. And it's also, he says, it you can see it from the context, because it was done at a party, let's say, but in Eretz Yisrael, every place, you have people whose job it is, rabbis, whose job it is to arrange Kiddushin, and Ashkenazim have a halacha that we don't have Kiddushin without a chuppah. There was no chuppah here. So the question is all this going to be good enough? Meaning nobody really thinks they meant to get married. So the question is the stuff that we have good enough to counterbalance the fact that by some halachic standard, there seems to be a wedding, a marriage ceremony that had gone on? So this witness who says that it was clearly a joke also said he only heard one word, mikudeshet, meaning he didn't really hear the guy say hareat. He just said mikudeshet, and he didn't hear very afshalo amar li. Now, the question is, let's say a man says to a woman, let's say you go to the wedding, and however it happens, but a man says to a woman, hareat mikudeshet, kidat Moshe of Yisrael. So most poskim say that doesn't work. It's not a valid kiddushin. The Bach, who we just learned from, seems to have thought it was a valid kiddushin, but there's a sefer called Get Pasha, which is considered fairly authoritative, and the Get Pasha said we don't have to be machmir like the Bach unless they had shiduchin beforehand, meaning if they were engaged and the Bach holds, you just have a mikudesh, that's good enough, so then you might have to worry, and then if they decide not to get married, you might need a get me suffix. But in general, we assume that unless the word li is said, that it's not a valid condition, because the man hasn't made clear that they're creating an exclusive relationship between this man and this woman. And then there's a tshuva in the Beis Yosef who says that even if we have good reason to think they didn't intend to get married, such as nobody gets married this way, and that's true of this way, because nobody gets married in a derech skok like this, so then that would be good enough as well. Now, it is true, says Rav Herzog, that you see a man, in this case, you see a man put a ring on a woman's finger, and you hear him say the word mikudeshet, you might be required to assume, because there's yadayim, there's enough contextual evidence to assume that he said the word li, because in the world out at large, those who know the word mikudeshet to be used in marriage, generally know the form of this, are mikudeshet li, you are set aside special for me, we're creating an exclusive relationship with each other in these terms. So that li, maybe we have to assume it, because that's the way people will say it. Everybody knows that. But now, that's only an umdana. That's an assumption. And the reverse points out, there's a well-known debate about whether if you can assume something about a wedding, does that assumption carry enough weight that we have to follow it? So, reverse says, but over and over again, but that would all be true. The whole question of an umdana, following our assumptions, and whether we think people know the word li or not know the word li, that's all when you have somebody running in who's like an authority and who we can assume knows. But you're talking about random people. Am I so sure that random people know that the word li is very important? You might just know how random Gudesh and not pay attention to it. And also, the witness says the whole thing was a joke. And not only did the witness say the whole thing was a joke, there's the context shows the whole thing was a joke, and therefore I assume here that there's not even a suffix kiddush. You don't have to worry about it at all. There's nothing that went on here. Besides that, Mimikadesh, the guy who did it, says, he said, Ariyat Mekudeshet lefi dat Moshe Yisrael. That's what he claims. Now, again, the claims of a man about himself aren't accepted usually as halachic evidence because people will lie, especially after the fact, because they want to get out of something. So he's not saying we can just trust the guy that this is what he said. But Rav Herzog says, but listen to the words that he said. He said, Ariyat Mekudeshet. He left out Li, which gets us some help because there are those authorities hold if you don't say Li. Many authorities hold if you don't say Li, it's not a valid kiddushin. But in addition to that, he said lefidat Moshe Yisrael. But what he said, waiting, Harei Mekudesh Li kidat Moshe Yisrael. So he's changed the words. So the Rav Herzog is saying it's true. Maybe you'll argue that we don't believe a guy about something when it comes to himself, but the way he put it in, right? Why would he take out the Li? Unless, you know, so you could say, well, maybe he knows that Li is a problem. But he puts in lefi, which is completely not what's said, right? If he just said to us, I said to Harei Mekudesh kidat Moshe Yisrael, then we'd worry that he's taking out the Li on purpose, maybe, and therefore we can't trust his evidence. But here, when he puts in the word Lefi, it suggests that he didn't know the actual formula that Shimon said at weddings, and he thought he was saying the right formula. And then we can say, yeah, he probably left out the Li, because he's telling us that he, meaning, maybe he hasn't paid enough attention at weddings that he's gone to. He thought the guy says, Harei Mekudesh, we say, Harei Mekudesh Li Kidat. He thought the words Li and Ki, those parts of it actually mean Lefidat Moshe Yisrael. So if he said that, we have some reason to think that he said that, because now it's the kind of mistake somebody doesn't make on purpose. It's a mistake that they only make because they don't even know what they're talking about. And that's true for Moshe, of Herzog says, even though the halach is, if a man doesn't mention Dat Moshe Yisrael at a wedding, so there's a problem there. We would think that you'd have a marriage you'd have to worry about. So even so, but since he's telling us what he actually said, what he thinks he actually said, and the way he's saying it gives us reason to believe that he's not lying because he doesn't understand what a good lie would be. So therefore, we have, again, reason to say that the wedding never happened and that he didn't say it in the right language, and therefore we don't have to worry about it. And then, of course, also the groom is saying, the man who gave the ring is saying he didn't mean it, everybody knew it was a joke, right? That's what the kids are all claiming. They're saying everybody knew it was a joke, and so they don't think there should be any problem. They don't understand why these rabbis are struggling with this. The question is, can we believe people that it was really a joke? So this all helps, Rav Herzog is saying, to accept that this is not a wedding that we have to worry about. Now, the girl says, and nobody denies that she says it. So again, even though we can't believe her fully because theoretically, had she really meant it at the time and then realized what an idiot she was for getting married at the age of 15 and accepting Kiddushin, and now they're going to get divorced and they're going to marry a coin, so she wants to say it never happened, which happens to people. People regret what they do, and then they'll say things to get themselves out of it, but halachically, it doesn't matter. Meaning, let's say what really happened was, a guy and a girl had a moment of interest in each other, and they're at a party, and the guy says, Harei Mekudeshet Li Tabat Zugdat Moshe Yisrael, and I want you to be betrothed to me, or, you know, exclusive to me with this ring, and there are two witnesses there, and let's say they're valid witnesses, and they do it, right? And they have this wedding, this whatever they have, and they mean it. They wake up in the morning, they say, that's crazy, we're 50, they each say, that's crazy, we're 50, so they say, it was just a joke. They may even convince themselves it was just a joke. That's why we can't accept their claims about themselves after the fact, if we have evidence for what actually happened, because we worry that they changed their minds. So ordinarily, if she says she was just joking or whatever, we don't believe her. But what she says now is that she immediately said to him, I don't want to. Are you crazy? Ani lo rotza hahishtagatem. Are you nuts? And nobody denies that she said that. So if she said that, so then that's a rejection of it. Now, the question would be, normally you want her to throw the ring away. If she threw the ring away and said that, then that would even help you even more. But that would seem to help us say that there was no marriage here to begin with, therefore there's no worry about it. Not only that, we haven't spoken about the witnesses yet, says Rav Herzog. And this now gets to the territory, yesterday's territory, of what do we do about the witnesses and whether or not they were observant Jews and therefore valid witnesses. So the reports are from this rabbi in Zichron Yaakov. One is for sure not observant and therefore is not a valid witness. And the second one, there were only two. And the second one, we're not sure if he keeps. We have doubts about his observance. So the avenue to leniency, says Rav Herzog, as Rav Moshe Feinstein said yesterday, would be the ruling of the Binyan Tzion of Rav Yaakov Ettlinger, which is what we all rely on. And that's from the mid-1800s. Rav Yaakov Ettlinger said, maybe we can treat all these people as Tinoko Chenishbu. We can treat them, the non-observant, those who grew up non-observant, like they were taken captive by non-Jews when they were little, and therefore they really know nothing about Judaism, and therefore, as we say, as we often say today about these people, we don't really fully blame them because they didn't know any better. Not so clear that they can say that, but then Rav Herzog says, Akli b'maseis me'od, I'm not sure that I can rely on this leniency, and I don't think people realize this. So we saw Rav Moshe Feinstein say it yesterday, we're going to see Rav Herzog say it today. Rav Herzog's reason is slightly different. Me'achar shu be'aretz Yisrael, kid lives in Israel, ובוודאי ידע ושמע שאנו מרעישים עולמות על חילול שבת קודש. He's got to have heard that the Orthodox are complaining and upset about the fact that Shabbos is being violated, right? So that kid, so Rafferty is saying, so that kid can't be a Tinok Shenishba anymore because he hasn't come back to Judaism. This is a counterbalance or counter opinion to the Binyan Tzion said that I don't think people know about and pay as much attention to as they could. It creates difficult problems for how we view each other as Jews. In any case, he says if there's no igun there, if it wasn't a problem that the guy's disappeared and we can't get her again, so we usually are machmir mikidusha eidecha. We usually would be stringent about that. You have one witness because you have this one witness, although he's a doubtful witness because maybe he's not a tinok shenishba. But here, since it seems like it's a joke, there seems enough context, enough testimony that it makes that it was nobody meant it, and the Ritva held that you have to identify the Edim Ksherim. You have to say, you two are my Edim, or you one are my Edim, whatever it is. So that would be necessary. And therefore, there's lots and lots of reasons that he thinks he doesn't need a get. And the reason we don't have to give her a get is because then she'd be Psula Lekuna. We don't have to do that to her. And why should we stop her, who's just an innocent little girl, an innocent child, you know, basically a teenager, and she says that she never wanted to get into it. Why should we make problems for her? And therefore, he thinks that we can let her go, and we don't need her to give her a get. And then he says, but if the boy is willing to accept it, he thinks it would be a very valuable public lesson if the boy, if the man, would have to pay a fine. And that because of the embarrassment and the insult and the trouble he caused this young woman, and making her have to worry and go through all this terrible tension that maybe she needs to get, maybe she needs to be able to start calling, it's very upsetting, so that everyone will see and know that you don't make jokes out of Kiddushin. If he's not ready to do that, see if you can bring him to a court and they'll do it, then that'd be great. And he says, bring them to a civil court, like a governmental court. If they'll do it, then that would be great. And you can sue basically for pain and suffering. And if he's a soldier, this is 1951. So I think Rafferty has like a very ideal version of what soldiers do or what the army will do. He says, tell the Ramatkal, his commander or the chief of staff, about the soldier and his actions. And so that would make him not teens or young or older teens, or maybe in their early 20s. And they can bring him to a military court. And all of this is because we don't want B'nai Yisrael to be hefker. We don't want people to treat B'nai Yisrael as if they can just grab them and force a kedushin on them and then make them have to bear the burden of proof that they didn't mean it, they didn't mean to get into it. And maybe the military court, he says, would be willing to take it to a rabbinic court and authorize rabbinic court in this case to rule on this soldier. And because the Rafferty wants it to become clear and wants enough discipline meted out that people understand this was not something that should have been done. And then he throws in at the very last second, he says, but I am the Yirei Ha'ora'ah, very important quality. I don't rush to rule on things on my own based on my own intellect. And therefore, I'm telling you that this ruling isn't valid unless you find, so this Rav and Zichron Yaakov would agree, and find another Rav to agree to this and to accept, another important rub, to agree to this and accept this psak. So for today, for the 8th of Shvat, I'm stopping a little early. I'll throw in one last little piece, a very quick summary of something Moshe Feinstein said in a second. But basically we had the Shura Bach, the Bach telling us the Pidyon HaBen can, if necessary, come before the Brit Milah, the redeeming of the firstborn can come before the circumcision. And Rav Herzog talking about the reasons why we can sometimes look at a marriage, what seems like it had the form of a wedding to it, and say it's not a marriage at all. Now there is a shoot in Igrot Moshe, Orech Chaim Chilek Gimel Simin Lamed Vav, that I'm not actually doing. I'm going to summarize it in like 30 seconds, but it's from the 8th of Shvat of 1969 of Tav Shin Chof Tet, Chilek Gimel Simin Lamed Vav in Orech Chaim. Somebody asked whether a CPA, a certified public accountant, was invited to join a non-observant Jew, right? A Jew who violates Shabbat, was invited to join the firm, and this other CPA was elderly, and he's going to retire soon, and when he retires, this guy would get the business. So he's invited to join the firm, and until now, he's worked for other people. So the question is, can you join, and the other guy's going to violate Shabbos while they're working together. So theoretically, you could say the other guy would take the profits from Shabbos, but it's not so simple to do that. Well, I'm not getting to the tshuva, but what the piece of it that really interested me was that Moshe Feinstein says very clearly that he thinks being able to be the owner of your own business is really important to people, and that's an important value, and that value will allow us to find all the various ways to let this guy join the firm and become a CPA, even though he's going to have to be partners with a non-observant Jew. So those are some responsa a day for the 8th of Shvat, with thanks to the OU, to Rabbi Jacob Bromwitz, and to David Hochhauser. I bid you a good day.